It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in our second half hour, we'll look at a question here, a new trend that rewords city ordinances around the state where a dog is declared vicious based on its behavior, not its breed. We'll talk about pit bulls and Rottweilers, that in the second half hour. If you're a dog lover, as I am, you'll want to stay tuned for that. Zach Walls is a name we've become very familiar with over the past 3 years. Walls, who grew up in Iowa City and recently graduated from the University of Iowa, skyrocketed to celebrity in 2011. That happened after a video of his speech before the Iowa legislature went viral and became the number one political YouTube video of that year. And in that short speech, he'd been addressing the Iowa House Judiciary Committee in a public hearing on a proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage in Iowa. What followed were a flood of appearances on many national shows. David Letterman, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart on Ellen. In 2012, he came out with a very successful memoir called My Two Moms about growing up as a young heterosexual with two lesbian mothers. He's an Eagle Scout. He co-founded Scouts for Equality, a national organization leading a campaign to end discrimination within the Boy Scouts. He was also called upon by the Democrats to speak at the party's national convention in 2012. Well, what's Zach Walls been up to lately? The 23-year-old just finished up a summer internship at the White House and joins us now from our nation's capital. Zach Walls, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
We want to reach out to our listeners and ask if you have any questions about working as a White House intern. This would be the time to do it. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Zach, what sort of work were you given at the White House?
So I was the press and media affairs intern at the White House, which meant that I was working in the Office of Communications. Basically, my job was I got to the White House at about 7 o'clock every morning, and I was responsible for reading newspapers, regional outlets from Minnesota down to Louisiana and east, and read these newspapers, their websites every morning, and find the important stories that were relevant to the administration about the president or his policies. And then also just, you know, regional events, happenings going on in the country, and then send those up to communication staff in the West Wing every morning. And then throughout the day, me and my fellow interns of the media affairs office would continue to monitor various events, whether those were from outlets at the regional level or specialty outlets concerning, for example, LGBT press or African-American press throughout the entire country, and just kind of keep people abreast of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Would you get directives to be on the alert for any specific stories over the summer? We had, of course, Ferguson. I don't know if you were in that position in your internship during the happenings in Ferguson, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the president did a lot of traveling this summer. He was all over the country, talking with people who had written him letters about their lives. And that was a big push the president did over the summer. So whenever the president was traveling, we'd be covering things like that. When the president and the EPA announced this new climate action plan, we put together documents, you know, looking at all the coverage that these things received from, you know, regional papers like the Des Moines Register or the Cedar Rapids Gazette, all the way up to the New York Times and other national outlets, as well as some international outlets as well. So we were definitely told from time to time to keep an eye out for certain things. But our big focus was really kind of on the day-to-day monitoring of the media.
You said you worked with other White House interns. How many in mm-hmm. your group?
So there were about a dozen folks in the communications department. Mm-hmm. And then within our specific office, it was me and two other interns who were responsible for the bulk of the media monitoring.
It sounds like interns are plentiful there in the White House.
Oh, absolutely. The interns, you know, we do a lot of work. We, for the most part, worked between 10 and 12 hours a day, for the most part, usually closer to 12. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky. I lived pretty close for the most of the summer. I was in GW's dorms. So it was just a several block walk from my my dorm room to the EEOB or the Eisenhower Executive Office building where all of the interns work.
How long did your internship last?
I started right after Memorial Day and I finished just this past Friday. Mm-hmm. So just about 3 months.
You know, we all have an idea of conception of what it's like in the White House, and many of us have visited the White House, but that's different than what you did. With your insider perspective, were there any surprises about what you encountered there, the way the place works, how it was different from the expectations you had that had been formed through the media, the rest of us have?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it was a little bit less like The West Wing, you know, or House of Cards than anybody.
We would hope it would be less than like The House of Cards.
Right.
But,
yeah, of course, right. Of course. No, but the reality is that it's an office like any other office. And I think that there's people often have this idea in their head that it's the White House. It's like the ultimate, you know, in terms of what an office space is like, or the people, or the technology available. And the people are incredible. I, every single day, found myself surrounded by individuals working for the administration who came from, you know, extraordinarily high-powered careers, whether on Capitol Hill or in nonprofit advocacy or other places in government, and now had all come together to the White House. But the reality is that you're just a group of people working in an office. You know, we don't have super flat screen monitors everywhere. It's not Star Trek or anything. It's an office building in downtown Washington, D.C. And it's an awesome office building, but it's still an office building.
Mm-hmm. You said a lot of high-powered interns you were working with, but I'm guessing you were one of the more high-profile interns there, or not?
You know, I think everybody who makes it to an internship at the White House has done something pretty remarkable. So, you know, and frankly, you know, the interns all keep a pretty low profile for the most part, whether to support the staff and help them and their responsibilities, certainly not the other way around. So we all kept a pretty low profile for the summer.
Joining us with your questions for Zach Walls, he just completed a summer internship at the White House, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Of course, one of the big questions we want to find out is, how often did you see the president, or the vice president, or the first lady?
Good question. So we didn't see him terribly often. I happened to be out of town. I actually spent 2 weeks in the beginning of August backpacking with my Boy Scout troop in Iowa City. We were all out in New Mexico, and the time when the president met with the intern class was actually during the 2 weeks I was away. So I got to miss out on that, which I was a little bummed about. But there were two other opportunities. I got to not meet the president, but to be in the same room as him. The first was a Medal of Honor ceremony in June, which was pretty incredible. And the second time was later that month, when the president joined some of the staff to watch the World Cup game when the United States made it to the round of 16.
Oh, you watched the World Cup? You watched the World Cup with President Obama?
Yeah. So that was definitely a highlight of the summer. No doubt about it.
So this is in what room of the White House?
It was just in an auditorium room where they had the game up on a projector.
Mm-hmm. So when the president enters a room, any room, an auditorium or a smaller room, it changes the atmosphere. Can you tell us how?
Absolutely. I mean, so, of course, there's a security detail. So all of a sudden you can no longer go into or leave the room. You're stuck in the room with the president. But also, you know, the energy, everybody's, I'm sure it's comparable to any business where the CEO walks into a room. He's the leader of the free world. He's ultimately, our chief executive in that capacity. And everybody, I remember he walked into the room and everybody burst out and started applauding. I think there might have been a chant of USA that broke out in the room. But he was there to watch the game. I think he was there for probably 10 minutes or so before he had to get back and get back to the West Wing.
Any comments you remember, or did he get a chance to say hi to him?
Oh, not really. He was down in the front row, and I was near the back. But he was certainly happy to be there, and it looked like he was enjoying watching the game.
And on a previous visit to the White House, you have had a chance to meet the president and talk with him, though. I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's correct.
Do you want to relay that?
Yeah. My sister and I had the chance to go to a holiday reception. This was in December of 2012, where we had a chance to talk very, very briefly. And get to see the East Wing. It's great.
Now, I looked at your website, Zach, and you tag yourself as an author, advocate, and entrepreneur. You've worked as a political activist. I relayed some of the things you've done at the beginning of our conversation. You've worked to make the Boy Scouts of America more inclusive. You were invited to speak at the DNC National Convention. It sure seems like a career in politics is in your future now after this White House internships. Would you say that's likely?
I say that's certainly well within the realm of possibility. No immediate plans to work in politics or government at this point. I'm looking at a couple of different opportunities here in D.C. for a year or so. I'm also thinking about going back to school full time, so we'll see if that shakes out. And I'm actually currently helping review a manuscript about the Varnum decision, the 2009 Iowa Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage. And I'm really enjoying it, and I'm it's been a lot of fun to do some real reading and get to do some solid research into the area. So I'm enjoying what I'm doing quite a bit right now.
And, of course, personally connected with the Varnum decision, it allowed your mothers, Terry and Jackie, to be legally married in Iowa. What are you reviewing in particular? What interests you most about the Varnum decision that you're going to be looking at?
Well, I think I've personally been interested, you know, first and foremost, the role that kids played in how the lawsuit came together and how children specifically were affected by the ruling and also the deprivation of marriage rights to same-sex couples. But it's also just been very fascinating to read so much of the backstory about all of the various activists, as well as the legal minds and the plaintiffs. You know, and a lot of these names are awfully familiar. So it's been a lot of fun to read the manuscript and get a little bit of the backstory. You know, as you mentioned at the beginning, I just kind of happened to pop out of the marriage conversation so late in the game in 2011, and with really no education beforehand about what all had happened to get to that hearing into that proposed constitutional amendment. But to go back now and to read a lot of this backstory has been very enlightening.
It seems as if you were perhaps a surfer on the beach at the right time when the wave came along, and you were the right surfer. You got on it. Now you're learning about what caused that wave of attitude change and the
Absolutely.
Ruling.
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely.
Hmm. So your possible career path includes what? What are you considering?
Well, so I'm currently talking with a renewable energy company out here in Washington, D.C. I studied sustainability at the University of Iowa, trying to examine how economics and environmental science interplay with each other to try and figure out what our future is going to look like as a young person and as somebody who grew up in the Boy Scouts of America. And I'm deeply concerned about what the future of our planet looks like and how that's going to affect those of us who are stuck on it for quite a while longer here. And so I would absolutely like to work for a company that's trying to figure out a way to have a solution for our energy usage that is clean, sustainable financially and environmentally. And that's a big passion of mine that's been around for a lot longer than, frankly, my activism and LGBT rights.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are an Eagle Scout, I mentioned. You co-founded an organization, Scouts for Equality, that led a campaign to end discrimination within the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts of America no longer excludes gay or lesbian members, but it does not officially allow, correct me if I'm wrong, Zach, does not allow gay or lesbian leaders?
Correct. You're correct.
So what are you still working on that front? What's left to do in your eyes?
Mm-hmm. So I actually had to briefly step away from the campaign while I was at the White House. They have very strict rules about leadership positions in other organizations. They don't want to accidentally put somebody like me in a position where you are, you know, accidentally either being pressured to use your position at the White House to advocate for one thing or another. And so I had to step away from the campaign over the summer, but I fully expect to return to my work in that area with Scouts for Equality. As you mentioned, the ban on gay youth members has been lifted. If you're under the age of 18, you can be openly gay in the Boy Scouts. However, on your 18th birthday, you will be removed from the Boy Scouts. Parents like mine are still barred from being leaders in their son's scouting experience. And to us, that is not just, immoral, but also, frankly, just completely illogical given their new policy, which allows for the participation of gay youth. It doesn't make sense to us that you would allow a gay scout to participate in the organization until he's 18 and then throw him out after he wants to give back to that organization on his 18th birthday. So I fully expect to return to Scouts for Equality in a leadership capacity and to continue our work in that front. And we're feeling pretty good about what our timeline looks like there.
Do you have an estimate of when you think you will break down that wall that you just described still at the Boy Scouts of America?
So earlier this year, former Secretary of Defense Bob Gates, who is himself an Eagle Scout, actually took over as the president of the Boy Scouts of America's board. And he's taken a pretty active role in helping the organization figure out how to move forward into this century. And I think that it's incredible for the Boy Scouts to have access to such strong leader, somebody with so many credentials as him. Now, as former Secretary Gates has said on the record that he would have supported ending the ban on gay adults if he had been with the organization when they were going through that process in 2013, but he was not. He said that he does not want to relitigate the issue. It's our point of view, however, that the issue is going to continue to be a pressing concern until there's final resolution, and that it's his position as a leader to help move the Boy Scouts in the direction that he seems to be best. And from our point of view and from what he said, that does appear to be a full end to the ban on gay adults as well.
As you're well aware, approval for Congress is at an all-time low. Many people are really down on politics, have been for a number of years. About our system, the amount of money, for instance, flowing into campaigns, the role of money in our election process and in our system of government. I wonder if you had any thoughts like that, thoughts about that. It's a question that I ask of all politicians, a lot of people working in public policy. Nobody seems to have a fix for it. Do you have some thoughts?
Well, I would certainly be open to hearing the fix. I mean, I absolutely I would agree with your assessment of the role that money's played in corroding our politics to the point where they are today. However, on the other hand, I would also think it's important to point out that despite a lot of the moral insolvency we might see in today's politics, there certainly are some, I think, some glimmers of hope. I think that you've got, LGBT rights is a fantastic example of this. And now, granted, this is an area where you're working through a court system as opposed to the legislative process. But we certainly have seen a number of victories in this particular part of politics over the last decade. And we're continuing to see support in the court of public opinion move in a solid direction as well. And that's something that I think is extraordinarily exciting. And I think it's also important to understand the role that money did play in this issue. There was a lot of dollars that were invested by national organizations. There was also a lot of just personal capital that was spent as well by the plaintiffs, for example, in Iowa in the Barnum decision, as well as a lot of the grassroots folks who were willing to go door to door, talk with their friends, family, people who were in their communities, and really put in the work. And so I think that ultimately, if I had to think of what the great challenge is, in our politics today, I think money is absolutely a big problem. But I think, frankly, the cynicism that a lot of people have about politics, the feeling that there's nothing that they can do or nothing that they can say to change the system for the better, I think that's really has to be seen as public enemy number one.
And this highly partisan atmosphere that we've had for many years is part of that, the disappearance of sort of the middle. The moderates in each party.
Well, I think that we've seen a lot of ideological purity within the parties. There was a long time where you could have moderates and even liberals within the Republican Party. The Blue Dog Democratic Caucus with conservative Democrats was at one point had as many as 60 people in the United States House of Representatives. Today, that caucus is much, much smaller. And today, a moderate Republican is often seen as kind of a bit of an oxymoron. So I think that as we've seen this ideological purification in both parties, I think that has certainly made partisan cooperation a little bit more difficult on both sides of the aisle. But I think, ultimately, we also, from my point of view, need to understand that compromise is not always a dirty word, and that just because you have a strong conviction doesn't mean that you can't get some policy done with people who disagree with you.
Are you stumping for any candidates in the midterm election campaign?
No plans as of yet. When I was at the White House, you were again barred from doing any political work. And so there was a 3-month hiatus where I was not talking with anybody about any kind of work like that. My last day was on Friday. So it hasn't been even quite a week yet, but I certainly wouldn't rule that out for the fall.
What do you see if the GOP takes control of the Senate? I'm assuming you're a Democrat, right?
Registered Democrat in Iowa, yes.
What do you see if the GOP takes control of the Senate, as polls seem to indicate is likely?
Well, I think that the biggest concern, if Iowa, or excuse me, if the Republican Party does take over the Senate, would probably be the Supreme Court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is still a tenacious Supreme Court justice, but if for health reasons she decides that she no longer wants to be a member of the court, or if God forbid something were to happen to her health, I think that this would be a difficult situation for the president, where he would certainly face some very real difficulty in trying to have somebody who he would see to be in the intellectual tradition of Justice Ginsburg replace her on the bench. Of course, if the Democratic Party didn't control the Senate, you'd have a very tough confirmation fight for whoever her potential replacement would be. I think that you'd also see a lot more difficulty when it comes to action around the immigration crisis on our southern border. I don't think there's anybody on either Republican or Democratic Party at this point who would try to tell you that the status quo is acceptable. And so I think that if you have a switchover of parties in the Senate, the president's agenda for the southern border would certainly face a little bit more difficulty. But, either way, you're going to have a solution there one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Zach, we have about a minute and a half left. I wonder, hearkening back to what you just completed, you were a White House intern over the summer. Do you have a favorite memory you'll carry with you, a favorite story that took place this summer as part of the White House
staff? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as incredible as being in the room to watch the World Cup with the president was, and that was very, very cool. There was also a moment this summer when the president announced that he would be issuing an executive order to end discrimination against gay and lesbian and transgender people end discrimination against those people by federal contractors. This was in the spirit of a number of previous executive orders that had taken similar action along race, religious belief, and gender. And so this was a pretty big moment. The president had pledged to do this when he was running for office in 2008, but was strung up through 2012, and then was hoping still for a legislative solution from Congress for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. But to be at the White House and to be responsible for reading a lot of the LGBT blogs and websites when the administration finally announced that they would be taking this action, and then to be able to listen to the president's speech when he talked about why this was so important to him was a really pretty incredible thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily the last thing on the checklist for what the president could do for the LGBT community, but it's certainly a big step forward.
Okay.
So I was very happy about that.
Author and activist Zach Walls, Iowan, thank you for joining us from the nation's capital. Zach, we hope to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Coming up in our second half hour, what is it that makes a dog vicious and potentially dangerous? We'll discuss a new trend that rewords city ordinances here in Iowa, where a dog is declared vicious based on its behavior, not on its breed. Dog lovers, pay attention. We'll be right back after the break. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.